Another edition of five things that interest me currently coming up for you guys. This one is kind of a mixture of questions that people have asked me and stuff that I'm interested in. So I want to start off with a question that Dave Mattson, who you guys all know very well, he asked on a group text. It's about BYU football. And the question from Dave is, thoughts on the new offensive line coach, Eric Matios, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, for BYU football. And my thought is, I have no idea who this guy is. And that's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just, it's a thing. And the only thing that I guess would concern me about the hire, and it has nothing to do with Eric, and it has nothing to do with his success as a coach up to this point. My only concern is, I'm wondering if Jeff Grimes is a little too reliant upon people that have coached at LSU. And what I mean by that is, Ryan Pugh was with him down there. I think it was at LSU. It certainly was at Auburn. And now we got Eric, who was at LSU for a little bit. He's coming from Texas State. I'm just wondering, is he doing a good job at finding upcoming talent, or is he just relying on people that he knows from LSU? And I don't have the answer to that. And hey, 2 years could go by and Eric could be a great offensive line coach, and maybe I'm in the wrong and Jeff Grimes has a great tree of people underneath him. And at that point, I will happily say I'm wrong. Jeff Grimes has a great coaching tree and extensive Rolodex of people. We're good to go. But, you know, sometimes I wonder if you're too reliant on people you know, are you missing out on great talent that's around you? You know, I see this in jobs that I'm around at my current company all the time, where people get promoted and you just wonder, why is this guy getting the job? Is it because he's here at the company and people know him, or is he truly the most qualified person there? I think we all ask that when we apply for jobs that we feel we're qualified for, and then we find out someone maybe got the job and we're just like, what? I'm more qualified than this guy, but that other guy had a connection. And life is it's mostly about connections and who you know, and I totally understand that, but I'm just wondering aloud, and this, like I said, I want to reiterate this point. I'm not saying that Eric is not going to be a good coach. I'm simply saying I don't know, and I think it's curious that Jeff Grimes direct hires have come from his tree. That's all I'm saying. So we're going to find out. This hire is actually more important than people realize, because I think the offensive line at BYU is going to determine the success of the offense this upcoming season. They have a lot of returning guys. If they can be really good and protect Zach Wilson, then this offense has a chance to be really good. I think they have great tight ends, good enough wide receivers, a lot of question marks at running back. And if the offensive line is a strength, then this team can be good, because prior BYU teams with good offenses had great offensive lines. And so this position matters. And I hope Eric is successful as a BYU fan. And time will tell if this is the right hire and if Jeff Grimes continually going back into his Rolodex is the right move, rather than opening up a nationwide search and finding some talented dude at another small school that he doesn't know. So we're going to find out, and it's going to be interesting. But those are my thoughts on BYU's new hire of Eric Matios as the offensive line coach. All right, the second thing that I'm interested in, it's also BYU related. This time it's hoops. And BYU hoops is in a unique position. They're in the second place in the West Coast Conference. And What I think is interesting is there was a tweet by Greg Rubel who said that BYU's back in NIT contention. And my first thought when I saw that tweet from Greg was, man, what the heck has happened to BYU basketball that we're interested in getting in the NIT? And I was just like, man, this is not where BYU hoop should be. We should be fighting for a tournament bid. Like, there's no reason that BYU can't and shouldn't be in the NCAA tournament at least every other year. When they were in the Mountain West with Dave Rose, they were in the tournament basically every year. And now it's been, I think it's been 3 years going on 4 years that we will not have been in the tournament. There's really no way that BYU gets it in this tournament barring a miracle win versus Gonzaga in the WCC tournament. I don't think that will happen. And so that was my initial thought was, man, BYU basketball is not where it needs to be. And then as I thought about it a little more, that's actually pretty impressive for this group. They're undersized. They've had a couple injuries. Jashir's been hurt. They've been mixing up their starting lineup. Now Gavin Baxter's playing a role. I don't know what this means for this season. It probably doesn't mean much. And they're going to go to the NIT, and I think it's going to be, I don't want to say an unsuccessful season for BYU, but certainly a season in which they didn't meet their goals of getting to a tournament. And that's got to be the baseline goal for BYU. There's no other expectation that is acceptable. But I do like a lot of what's happened to this team in WCC play. Finding Gavin Baxter and developing him into a rotational guy is going to be really important for this team if they want to get back to being where they want to be down the road. And so, you know, if they still have a couple games left in WCC play that they typically lose, they go on the road at Loyola. But if they can take care of San Francisco at home, beat Loyola on the road, you know, then I think that's a step that this program has been needing to take in WCC basketball, which is beating the teams that you're better than. And if they can do that and start to set that precedent and develop some young talent, Connor Harding, Gavin Baxter, then maybe BYU is ready to get back into consistent NCAA tournament discussion next year and the year after. And I think that's exactly where BYU needs to get. So am I disappointed? Yeah, because I want to be in the tournament. And I think BYU, there's an expectation there that they should be in the tournament each and every year. So I'm disappointed from that regard. But I'm also kind of seeing a little light at the end of the tunnel with some of these young guys that maybe that expectation and that accomplishment is going to return. And so that is exciting for BYU basketball. Will it happen? Let's see what's going to happen down the road. I don't know. But I also will throw this in about BYU basketball. I think Yoeli Childs is coming back. And here's why. I am the play-by-play broadcaster for UVU women's volleyball. And Yoeli's wife, Megan Childs, is on the volleyball team. And she had a knee injury last year, and she didn't play a single match. She's coming back. And I think that she wants to play. I think there's that desire that, man, I missed out on a year of college volleyball that I want to be a part of. And I have a hard time seeing Yoeli going to Europe while his wife is playing college volleyball. That's just me. I could be completely wrong. I have no sources on this. This is completely my opinion. But if I were in his shoes, I would not want to be living in Europe alone with my wife living in Utah, where I could be playing college basketball on a big stage, playing on ESPN, playing Gonzaga, playing big teams. That's just me. Now, if he gets drafted into the NBA, that's a whole nother discussion. And right now, it's too early to tell if he's even on the big board of being drafted. But if he's going to go undrafted and go to Europe, come back. Come back to BYU. Let your wife play volleyball. You can enjoy your senior season. The team might be really good. You're going to have a lot of upperclassmen. So that's me. I think Yoeli's coming back. And I think next year, BYU is getting back in the tournament. and I'm going to look forward to it. So those are my first two thoughts on BYU football and basketball. The third thing that interests me is the state of the Lakers. No surprise, I'm a big Lakers fan. I talk about them a lot, as you guys know. I got asked at work, should the Lakers fire Luke Walton? They had a disturbing loss against Atlanta. I tweeted, if you follow me on Twitter, at Matt Biamonte, that loss eliminates them from playoff contention, and I believe that. Back to the original question from my coworkers, should they fire Luke Walton? The answer is no. Because it's not Luke's fault. You know, if I'm doing a blame pie, I'm putting 75% or more on Magic Johnson. And the rest on, a bigger chunk on injuries and then a little sliver on the players for not being professional and not performing. But for me, it is all about Magic Johnson and his inability to inspire these guys, and more importantly, to keep his trade affairs secret. You know, I was thinking about this. You know, there's two trains of thought going on. There is one, which is being in trade rumors are really hard, and that's my state. And then there's, well, these guys are pros. They make millions. They need to play better. And I understand that, but I don't think that is truly being sympathetic to the situation. And since those trade rumors, the Lakers' defense has went in the toilet. Ever since Lonzo got hurt against Houston back in mid-January, the Lakers' defense is 28th out of 30. So it's really bad. And then add on the trade rumors that Magic so elegantly allowed to be leaked. I think it was the Pelicans that leaked it. But still, I mean, you got to have a little foresight there. Man, I'm thinking about that, and I'm like, you know, how would I feel? And I would feel like I don't want to play for the Lakers if this is how they're going to do it. And this is why. So I'm sure all the males who listen to the podcast, you guys play hoops. A lot of you play hoops. You play pickup basketball. So do I. Breaking news, I play pickup basketball from time to time. And my wife, Sarah, she can attest to this. I play pickup basketball, and 75% of the time I come home and I'm mad. I did not have a good time. Why? It's because I play with guys who are often selfish. They don't share the basketball. They're taking bad shots. They're who wants to play on that team? And I'm like, oftentimes when I get stuck with a group of guys who play that way, I'm not hustling back on defense. I am no longer looking to pass. I'm not doing the little things to make the team better. I'm out there to get mine, you know, burn some calories, make a couple threes, and go home. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, I played with some guys, and it was 4-on-4. I was with three guys who took good shots, passed the basketball, played defense, rebounded. We won like 6 or 7 games in a row. We had a blast. I had the most fun I've ever had. Because I wanted to do the little things. I was inspired by my teammates to play better, to pass, the extra pass, to do, you know. I had a lot of fun. And that's not often the case. And right now, comparing that to the Lakers, those guys aren't having fun. Because they were told by their boss, hey, you know, we love you, Kuzma, Josh Hart, Lonzo. I mean, can we not forget that it wasn't so long ago that Magic Johnson, in a press conference, told Lonzo Ball that they're going to hopefully put his jersey in the rafters, and now they want to trade him? How does that make you feel? It can't make you feel good. It can't make you feel like wanting to put in the extra effort to play better defense. You know, at my current job at Vivint, not so long ago, I was told by my boss, hey, you're doing a great job. I talked I talked to my boss, and we're going to get you a raise. You're doing so good. And I'm like, wow, I feel great. Like, I want to work even harder for these guys. And then imagine if a couple weeks later, my boss was like, hey, we moved you. Now you're working for another department. Take care. Thanks for all you've done. I'd be like, what the heck? You just gave me a raise and told me how good I was doing, and then you dumped me to another department? I wouldn't want to stay at that company. Let's make that loud and clear. I would not want to be there. And so I think that's a lot of what the Lakers are going through right now with their young players. These guys are young. They don't know the ins and outs of the league. They don't know how to be a professional and to fight through the stuff. Brandon Ingram's 21. Josh Hart's, I mean, he's a little older, but it's his second year in the league. These guys are just figuring it out. So should the Lakers fire Luke Walton? No, because none of this stuff is in his control. It's not his fault that the roster is constructed this way. It's not his fault that Rondo's been injured twice, broke a finger and tore a ligament. It's not his fault Lonzo Ball's out, who happens to be probably one of the most important defensive pieces for the Lakers. It's not his fault LeBron James, one, got hurt, the biggest injury of his career, and two, really doesn't like playing defense until it matters. So it's not his fault they traded Zubats and Mikhailuk. And they brought in two guys who, after two games, don't look like they're any good. So, you know, if Luke gets fired, good for him. Get the heck out of here because it's a mess. I don't know if Magic Johnson knows what he's doing. And I'm frustrated at the just lack of continuity and common sense for Magic Johnson. So hopefully he gets it together. But right now, as far as the Lakers' future is concerned, it's bleak with Magic Johnson doing things that don't equal success from a front office position. Another question I got asked. Well, I got to tell this story. So me and some guys at work were lucky enough to work at a place that gives us free lunch. And the way that it works is every 2 weeks we get these little papers. They're called meal tickets. And you can redeem one of those for lunch, not only at the work cafe, but at a couple local restaurants as well. It's really cool. And because of that, you get 10 every 2 weeks. And if you take vacation, you still get them. And so you can have a surplus. And we use that surplus to gamble a little bit. We'll bet meal tickets. And so I bet meal tickets that the Rams would win the Super Bowl. And we all know they didn't. And so I get back to work. I give up the meal tickets that I lost. And I kind of talked about going into the Super Bowl that I felt good about the Rams because I didn't think Tom Brady was playing that well. And one of the questions I was asked was, well, do you feel differently now about Tom Brady and his performance in the playoffs? And the answer is no. I don't think Tom Brady won the Super Bowl. I think the Patriots defense won the Super Bowl. And really, I think the Super Bowl came down to three plays. The Rob Gronkowski catch, the Brandon Cooks misfire by Jared Goff, and then the Brandon Cooks drop that would have tied the game at 10-10. One of those three plays were made. It was made by Rob, and I know that Tom threw the pass, but that was one of his few good passes of the game. And so I stand by my point that I don't think Tom Brady played that well, and if the Rams offense could do anything, I think they would have won the Super Bowl. And there was an interesting moment. And this is what makes the Patriots great. And if I've learned anything about the Patriots dynasty, look, I don't like them winning. I don't like watching them anymore. I'm ready for something new. But you have to respect them. And the story told about Brian Hoyer playing under Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and recognizing the language of the plays and the schemes and understanding what they would do in certain situations, that's what makes the Patriots so good. They get a contribution from a backup quarterback that doesn't play a single snap in the game. I can guarantee you that the Rams backup, Sean Mannion, did nothing to help that team in terms of preparation and performance on the field because we know he didn't play. And so the Patriots and Bill Belichick specifically find a way to get the most out of guys who have weaknesses. You look at a guy like Rex Burkhead. There's no way he splits a backfield with most other NFL teams. But he's a productive running back for the Patriots, and they get the most out of him. And then there's also the story about Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels just scrapping the offense, drawing something up on a whiteboard, which led to their only touchdown of the game. Just phenomenal stuff that really is indicative of how superior the Patriots coaching staff is versus everyone else. And Tom Brady, he's the best quarterback that's ever lived. He's the greatest of all time. I recognize that. But the Super Bowl win against the Rams was 100% an indication of how good Bill Belichick and his coaching staff is. It's remarkable. And you have to tip your cap to them. And so to my coworkers, no, I don't feel like Tom Brady was the difference in that Super Bowl. I think that he meant very little in that Super Bowl. He was one of 53 Patriot players that did their job, but it was the system and the scheme set in place by the coaches that ultimately led New England over Los Angeles. Last question I got asked that I thought was interesting was, how much would I pay per game, kind of an a la carte situation for content? This conversation started when me and some friends were discussing the new Disney streaming service. And I said, for $9.99, I'm not going to get it. I just don't think there's enough content. I know there's a lot of great movies on there. A lot of great movies. I don't watch that often. I can't tell you the last time. In fact, I've never seen Brave. I've never seen WALL-E. I've never rewatched, Monsters University. Like, I don't know. I just don't see myself watching those movies all the time. So, and now if that streaming service was $4.99, which it won't be, I'd be a little more interested. But for me right now, the Disney streaming service, I don't think is going to have enough content for me to pay $9.99. So my friend said, well, you know, I would pay upwards of $12 to watch a single sporting event, which I thought was crazy. So to answer the question, if games were available on a per dollar price, no subscription, I think the most I would pay is $4.99 for, let's just say, Clemson is playing Miami on a Saturday night in college football. I might pay $5 for that. Might. I know I certainly would at $2.99. $4.99, I have to think really hard about it. And then, you know, if the Lakers were in the NBA Finals, I would pay more to watch those games. But on average, I'm looking at 99 cents to $2.99 with an occasional $4.99. Who knows if that's ever going to happen? And for the record, I'm really happy with YouTube TV. For those of you who don't want cable, I think that's a really nice option. It's got unlimited recording. It's got live local channels. I mean, I think I have like 40 or 50 channels. I pretty much watch everything that I want to watch right there. So now the idea of a la carte channel with unlimited recording, that would be interesting. I might be willing to pay $5 a month just for ESPN, but I don't know. It's something we're thinking about because I think we're definitely trending in that direction from a media perspective. So, but my friend is crazy. $12 for one game? No, that's absurd. But it is an interesting idea. And anytime the consumer has more control, I think it's a good thing for us. It's not a great thing for the companies, but it's a good thing for us. So we'll have to see where it's going to go. But it's something worth considering now at home is what you are willing to pay, because that will likely determine what happens. I think a lot of companies want to duplicate the Netflix model. And so if you're not willing to pay $12 a game like I am, it's important that we make those decisions now, and then when it comes to pass, we can kind of help set the market in terms of what we will pay and what we won't. So it doesn't always work that way, but if people are paying $12 a game, then guess what? Get ready to pay $12 a game. I don't want to be one of those people, so hopefully in that case, we aren't paying that price, and we can get something a little more reasonable. All right, thanks, guys. That's all for this week in the podcast, and as always, subscribe where you can, comment where you can. I appreciate all the listens. You guys are the best. Have a great week.